Hi, welcome to Tech Thursdays on SoulcastStudio.com. I'm Dwayne Brown. We're going to talk about something that has had a huge effect on the human race in general. Digital has encroached on almost every part of our lives these days, but probably none more than digital photography. The music, it's out there. There's a lot of digital music out there, but digital photography has completely changed the way people are not only taking photographs, but storing them and using them down the road. Photography the old way was taking a picture and storing it on a piece of paper that would fade over time, sometimes as short as a couple years, and we're fortunate that some have lasted for hundreds of years. And that depends on the chemical process, the type of paper, the way it was stored. That really has not lent to a long-term solution. Now, digital photography, of course, stores it digitally. And that is, as far as we know, forever. That depends on the medium, of course. Different hard drives, different types of disks and storage formats may or may not last forever. That is yet to be determined, but it's certainly a lot longer than a piece of paper. The change that happened between the old style of photography and new digital photography is paramount to breathing in a different way for human beings. What used to happen is the image came in through a lens, it was collected onto a medium, or the negative as we came to know it as, and it's stored on there. Then the process of getting it out so that you could see it was called taking the negative and turning it into a positive. Light would shine through the negative, which had the reverse colors and the reverse polarity of what real life was, and when it came out, of course, it was the proper colors and the proper polarity of the way life was. So it really was a two-step process. The only similarities between that style and digital photography was the lens and the way the light was collected. The new digital photography is converted it basically to a one-step process. The light comes in through the lens and it's captured by the sensor behind the lens instead of the negative, which is now our medium, a sensor, and it is converted instantly into a digital format. You can see it right away on most cameras. They have an LCD screen on the back and you can see your results right there. Or if you don't have an LCD screen, it's stored onto some sort of memory card or memory storage device, and you can look at it later on a computer or print it out down the road. As I said, the input is similar. The lens is really the heart of photography, whether it be analog photography or digital photography. The lens sees the world and interprets it for you to view it. The lens collects light, it collects your subject through and focuses it onto the same size as the medium on the back, which is our sensor again. That, again, is the same between both methods of photography. The sensors, though, are where things really change. In current digital photography, the main sensor is called a CMOS sensor, CMOS, and that stands for a complementary metal oxide semiconductor. You'll never be tested on that, I promise you. Just know that it's CMOS. And most consumer digital cameras work on the CMOS sensor. And what that does, it's a small panel, very small panel, it fits inside this camera, of pixels. And we'll talk about megapixels and number of pixels in a camera in a little bit. But the pixels are the medium. They collect that tightly focused light and convert it right into digital right there. Now there is a second type of sensor called the CCD. It's a lot less known, but it's a lot more expensive. The CCD is more commonly used in video cameras, and especially in high-end broadcast video cameras. The CCD camera, it adds a semi-step into that one-step process, where the CMOS sensor collects that information, transfers it right to digital right there. The CCD reads that information as an analog signal, so it's soaking in those reds and greens and blues that are our primary colors, and then it transfers that into computer information, or the ones and zeros. So it's sort of a half step in there. The CCD is going to give you a lot better picture because it's reading real life red, greens, and blues. The CMOS is interpreting those red, greens, and blues, and I'll explain a little bit how it does that. So to talk briefly about color, because that's what really makes a picture what it is it the striking color or the sharp color. The CMOS sensors, they are not color specific. They have just on or off. That's all they are. They're registering on and off. Is there light there? Is there not light there? And then the various shades of gray in between. That's how it collects the image. to get color into that image, you need to use your primary colors of red, green, and blue, which when you put those three colors together, you can get any other color in the spectrum that you require. The sensors have, again, there's different ways of doing this, but most commonly in digital cameras, they use a system called bare filtering. And what that does is lay down a grid of red, greens, and blues over top of your entire sensor. And it's not nice and even red, green, and blue like you'd see on your TV. There's a whole line of red, green, red, green, red, green, and then a line of blue, green, blue, green, blue, green. So there's a lot more greens than there is blues and reds, and that has to do with the way the eye interprets color. You need more green in a picture for the eye to believe that there's true color there. This is very dry, I know. But it's important to know how cameras collect this information because it will actually help you decide what camera's good for you. So you've got this series of red, green, and blue, green tiny little boxes that make up the picture. There's then a small computer program in each camera that looks at this entire spectrum of color, and based on the color collection around each pixel, it can decide what that whole area should look like. So it uses an algorithm that then interpolates all that information from each pixel and every pixel around it to give you a picture that you recognize as the one that you took. It seems like a lot of work, and it is, but it happens in the blink of an eye every time you press that shutter button. So let's move on a little bit here. That's sort of the technical background of how these cameras are capturing information. Let's get to the information that you need to know that will help make your buying decision a lot easier, for sure. Let's talk resolution numbers. You've probably heard a lot of these numbers. 640 by 480. That's a very common, it was original computer screen size, and it's a low resolution now. A lot of cameras, they can shoot 640 by 480, and that's a good number resolution to email photos to friends on. It's a good resolution to use on websites. It doesn't take up a whole lot of time to download anymore, and it gives you the basics of what that picture is going to look like. It's fairly good resolution to look at, but it's not good for anything else than looking at on computers. 1216 by 912. When you multiply those two numbers together, you get approximately 1,000 pixels, and that is 1 megapixel. So a 1216 by 912, so it's 1216 wide by 912 pixels high, 1 megapixel. That is sort of a really low-end right now camera. There's not a lot that take it in that format. 1600 by 1200, this is where we start to get into a resolution that digital photography becomes realistic to use in everyday life. That is approximately, 1600 by 1200 is approximately 2 megapixels. That will give you good 4x6 prints. And that is the most common print size that's out there for passing around to your friends and showing the pictures of what you did last weekend. You take a step up to about 2240 by 1680, you're looking about 4 megapixels. Now you're getting into a resolution that you can start printing 5x7s, even some 8x10s. At that size, and you'll get as good a quality print as you would if you're using standard 35mm photography. And one of the bigger ones right now is 4064 by 2704, which is going to, it's about 11 megapixels, and that's going to give you any size print that you want to print out. You could print out almost poster size with that and not really start to see the space in between the pixels and know that you're missing any data. 11 megapixels is a big sensor size right now. One of the bigger ones, about 12 megapixels, the current leader right now, but 11 megapixels is going to be more information than any person is ever going to need. And to give you a bit of comparison and relativity to that, your computer screen, if you go into it right now and check into the properties to see what it's set at, it's probably set at one of two settings, either 800 by 600 or 1024 by 768 if you've got a widescreen for your computer. Think about that. 800 by 600, that is less than 1 megapixel of information on a camera. So if you're using a camera that's 4 megapixels large and you're showing that image on your computer screen, you're really only seeing 1/4 of the resolution of what that picture is you took. Does that seem like a waste to you? Yes and no. If you're only storing digitally, yeah, it's a huge waste. But if you're going to print out that picture into something, a 5x7 or 8x10, it's not so wasteful because you can always take all that information and convert it into a printable file. Then all the information in that 4 megapixel resolution is used to recreate this printed photograph that is as bright and as rich in color as any 35mm print is going to be. So that's where the importance comes in. What a lot of people will do is you can flip back and forth, and we'll go through it later on, but you can flip back and forth through the sizes of the pictures you want to take. If you're going to take a whole bunch of pictures and know that they're going to just sit on your computer and you can email them to your friends, shrink the size way down, because losing that information isn't going to affect the picture quality on your computer. But if you know you're taking some pictures that are going to be printed out, or you want to take a dozen pictures to pick the best one to print out, bump up the resolution to have as much information as you can, because the more information you have, the better picture it's going to be printed out. And let's, taking that a step farther now, we're talking numbers here. Film, what's the resolution of 35 millimeter film? It's a hard thing to pinpoint because film is a organic substance. It's like your skin. Can you pinpoint how many cells are in your skin? Well, some people will say yes, but you know what? There's so many in there, it's really hard to identify. Film is like that. But if we have to quantify it, by all accounts, the best guess is about 20 megapixels. Now you think, top cameras right now are hitting 12 megapixels. How far are we away from having pictures that are as good as any 35 millimeter film? It's tough to say again, because you can't just say 12 megapixels, 20 megapixels, or 20 to 20, because you've got to look at then the type of sensor you're using, that CMOS or CCD, and the type of color filtering that you're using. In a perfect world, you're going to have a 20 megapixel CCD sensor times 3 in your camera. One capturing all the reds, one capturing all the blues, and one capturing all the greens. Guess what? You might be close to film at that point, because you are capturing so much information that when you put it together, it is so tightly packed, those pixels, that you'll have to blow it up pretty large to be able to see each individual pixel. Only then can we truly say that we're getting close to film. In a lot of the consumer cameras, another setting you can play with to get better pictures is size versus resolution. There are two separate ways of looking at this. It's also known as size versus quality in some cameras, or they might not even mention size, it just might be small, medium, and large, and then resolution or quality. Another thing to consider in the cameras when you're setting up to take pictures is the size versus resolution. And versus is not really a right thing, because we're not competing these two here. It's actually a combination of the two that are going to make for a better picture based on how big it is. You can have a really good picture and be very small, or you can have a really poor picture and be big, and everything in between there. The size in a lot of cameras is simply a large, medium, or small. That is how big the picture is. It sounds simple, but it's all it is. Is it going to be 800 pixels wide by 600 pixels high, or is it going to be 1024 wide by 768 wide? And the resolution is how many megapixels is it going to denote to that size? So let me try and clear that up a bit. So if you decide to take a picture that is 1600 pixels wide by 1200 pixels wide, that's a mathematically 2 megapixel picture. If you've got an 8 megapixel sensor on your camera, you are not using the full extent of that camera. So you are compressing these 2 megapixels onto an 8 megapixel sensor. You're going to get a lot more quality that way. If you then say, I want to have a 4,064 pixels wide by 2,700 pixels high at the same 2 megapixels, you are now asking for a bigger picture, but with still on that smaller space on the camera. So you are, in a sense, spreading out these 2 megapixels over a bigger picture. You're going to have less quality. That is how it works. If you go with a small, medium, or large setting, and then tell it what the resolution is or how many megapixels you want, you can then combine to get small pictures for quick throwaway stuff or stuff you want to email, or bigger pictures for ones that you know that either A, you want to save for a long time and you want to have the option of doing something with them down the road, or that you know you're going to print out right away. I'll say it again, printing requires the maximum resolution and the maximum size to get the maximum quality of picture that you're going to print. That leads into, of course, size, storage space. The higher quality picture you're going to take, the more storage space you're going to need. Storage is currently saved on consumer digital cameras in three primary formats. There's the compact flash or the CF card, there's the secure digital card or SD card, and then Sony's memory stick. They all come in varying sizes, of course, just like when we talked about MP3 players. Anything from 1 gigabyte up is good for a camera these days. You can get smaller ones, 512, 128, but they're not going to store enough pictures for you to really be happy, especially if you're storing in high quality. You can estimate an average picture of decent quality is going to be 2 megabytes in size. So a 1 gigabyte card is going to give you approximately 500 pictures. If you go into the 10, 11 megapixel cameras, you're suddenly looking at pictures when they're taken that could be 6, 7, 8 megabytes in size. You're now scaling down the number of pictures you can get on that card and the number of times you have to transfer off so you can put more pictures in there. You have to consider is if you're going to take a lot of pictures at high quality, you're going to want to get a bigger memory card. Keep that in your thought process as you're going through picking out a camera. The two types of cameras that we're talking about in consumer photography are the automatic point-and-shoot cameras, the old Instamatic type, where all you really have to do is turn it on, look at the subject, press the button, and you've got a picture, and SLR photography, which is called single-lens reflex, and we'll go into that later on as well. The type of photography that you want to take is going to dictate the type of camera you should get, whether it be the Instamatic type or the SLR type. In the next two segments on Tech Thursdays, we'll look at each one and what each one does better than the other. For a quick overview though, the point-and-shoot cameras, they have a lot smaller lenses, they have a lot smaller sensors, they are more portable, they're the type that you can just throw in your purse or your backpack or even your pocket at times and carry them around, and they're a lot quicker to take a picture with. You just point and shoot. Granted, SLRs can do that, but you're dealing with a much bigger package. Consumer point-and-shoot cameras, currently in the range of 3 megapixels to 8 megapixels. There are bigger, there are smaller, but that's the main range right there. And you're looking at between $150 and even up to $600, $700 for a point-and-shoot camera. The SLR cameras, you're looking at 8 megapixels and above. Current flavor is 11 megapixels. They're the hot ticket right now. And you're looking at $1,000 and above for a good SLR camera. They've got interchangeable lenses and a whole lot of other functionality that we'll talk about later on. You already know if you're going to need a XLR or an automatic point and shoot. That's the easy choice. The next one is to look at the functions that these little guys have, to look at the function that the bigger cameras have, and then decide which functions are the functions that you need, as we say all along, to help you get the gear that's good for you. So tune in next week. We'll talk about point and shoot, digital cameras, and the wonderful world of digital photography.